Stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here on your Sunday morning. Rick Moore with you on WPVC. It is the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. An important topic to discuss today. We will have the phone lines open once again. If you choose to call in and make your comments and ask your questions to our guests, Luis Oyola, he's the community organizer, the immigrant advocacy of the advocacy. I'm already off to a great start. Community organizer of the immigrant advocacy program at the tell us more at the Legal Aid Justice Center.
Yes, thank you, and good morning, Charlottesville. Yes, I am an organizer with the immigrant advocacy program. I am live in Charlottesville, but a lot of my work is based out of the Richmond. Our Richmond office, Legal Aid Justice Center, has offices in Richmond, Charlottesville, and Falls Church. And my responsibility is organizing in the Central Virginia area, roughly.
You make that drive every morning?
Three times a week.
To help people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's what folks should do. We also have Donna Gasapo. You're with an organization, an activist organization called ICE out of Seville.
Yes.
Of all the things that I do to try and find and invite guests and programs onto organizations onto this program, I have not heard of ICE out of Seville. Where am I not looking?
Well, our work started out of organizing with people at Legal Aid Justice Center around the relationship between our local jail and immigration officers. So we found out back in 2017 that the local jail staff has an informal relationship with ICE, and they report immigrant detainees or people assumed to be immigrant detainees to ICE. And a group of us decided to get together to go to the jail board meetings to demand that they stop turning people over to ICE.
And that's with, are you discussing Colonel Comer?
Kumar?
Yes.
Yes. and the board.
Trying to remember things from scratch.
Yeah.
He was on the program like 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have had discussions with him, but basically through his relationship to the board. And, you know, talking to the jail board at their meetings about why it is that people in the community like us want them to end their relationship with ICE.
So we'll talk a little bit more about ICE out of Seville and what your current, how you go about helping folks and your activist roles and where you're headed and et cetera with Donna Gasapo throughout the hour and Luis Oyola here today on our conversation about immigration and immigrants and what's going on in the country, not just here in Charlottesville. But let's talk about immigrant activism in Charlottesville to start the hour. A lot of people know that we have IRC, International Rescue Committee, so Charlottesville has many folks in the area from countries around the world. Our school system certainly has we're well beyond just the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. We have an immigrant advocacy program, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious as to, Luis, what is your daily duty to go about and do?
So as organizer with Legal Aid Justice Center, my main focus is what's called our De-ICE Virginia campaign. This is a statewide...
De-ICE?
Yes. It's pretty clever. But it's a statewide effort to look at the ways that localities facilitate ICE activity through practices that aren't required by state law or federal law. ICE notifications at ACRJ is a great example of that. But outside of that campaign focus, as organizer, it's my work to connect with the community, build relationships in the community, develop leaders from impacted communities, and directly help with various issues, whether it's connecting them with attorneys, giving them rights to court appearances, or just getting to know what's going on, what are the issues that you need help with.
How do you help someone recognize the difference between one court document that they must follow and another court document or another piece of paper that they don't need to follow?
Are you talking here in the context of warrants or?
Warrants, or because I'm assuming, not as someone who doesn't have to deal with this, what I read in the paper, what I listen to on the radio is when ICE, if you are someone who has to be concerned with ICE, if they show up at your door with a piece of paper saying, "Let me in," you need to look and see if it is the type of document that requires you to do so.
Yes. So I definitely, a lot of my focus is going around all of the communities of Central Virginia or working with others to do this, to educate the immigrant community on the difference on their rights when ICE is knocking at their door or approaching them in various scenarios, but also the difference between what's called a judicial warrant, which is what we know of as a criminal summons to court that is reviewed and signed by a judge, and the difference between that and what's called an administrative warrant, which is a very similar document, very similar looking document to a judicial warrant that ICE uses completely internally to say, this person, we have reasonable suspicion that this person needs to be removed from the country. But it is, those warrants are not reviewed or signed off by a judge. It is entirely reviewed by ICE officers.
So, Luis or Donna, have either of you been given the opportunity? Have you seen a video of ICE going out on their maneuver to knock on a door so that you can see how they proceed to put that warrant in front of someone?
Yeah, I think that, we've all seen the videos going around social media of those kinds of interactions happening, around the country where ICE has approached people in their vehicles or vehicles that they're in. ICE has approached people at their homes. And even situations where ICE has waited for people outside of courthouses when they know that there are people on the docket who may or may not be undocumented immigrants or migrants. And I think a lot of us are familiar with those videos because many of them have gone viral and people have been outraged and have talked about what it is that we can do as concerned community members to interfere in those situations when it seems unjust.
Is there any lesson taught in lowering your stress? Because my concern would be if that paper was being waved in my face about how to lower my stress and getting that person on the other end to actually give me the opportunity to look at it without taking my hand and dragging me away, I don't know how to proceed from here.
Yeah.
I mean, if I want to look at it to compare what it should be or doesn't need to be, I don't know how to go forward from here.
Right. And I think that, a lot of us who have these concerns, whether we're directly impacted community members or people who are their neighbors and friends and care about them, you know, we recognize that if that were to happen, it can be a super stressful situation and maybe people don't know. And so one of the things that organizations like LAJC and like ICE out of Seville and other immigrant advocacy organizations will do is hold what we call Know Your Rights trainings. And these are in the community, but also with people outside of the directly impacted communities who are concerned, other concerned community members, to give them basically step-by-step instructions on what to do if they see ICE activity, whether it's a knock on your door or, you know, you're driving to work and you see a
sketchy van.
Yeah. Yeah, or what do they call those when the police stop people on the road?
Oh, checkpoint.
A police checkpoint outside of where we know immigrant neighborhoods are. You know, we give trainings to the community on what to do. And, one of the things that we have developed recently with another organization called Sin Barreras, and again, other immigrant advocates in the community, is what we are calling an ICE hotline. And that hotline we've been trying to spread across the community. There are people who are trained to receive phone calls on that hotline to take calls from people who have been approached by ICE or to take calls from people who see activity that they think may be related to ICE. And then we have a procedure for what to do once those calls come in.
Do you have that ICE hotline here?
Yes. And that number for your listeners is 855-298-3271.
And that's the ICE hotline for people to call if they see hotline activity?
ICE activity.
And so they're, sorry, I can't write and talk at the same time today. Obviously, I didn't have my brain wake up. So they're supposed to call, and what does that do? Does that?
So we have a team of a team that's available 24/7 of bilingual operators. All the operators are trained to give basic information on that person's rights, so they know this is your information in these stressful moments. Like this is what you have the option to do. Obviously, we're not going to tell them what to do, but it's up to them to decide. But this is the options you have, because in these stressful moments, it's easy to act out of impulse and do something that might affect you negatively. And then beyond the operator role, there's also a large team of community members that for suspected ICE activity that hasn't necessarily been verified, they will go out to the reported location and see, okay, this is actually ICE, or no, this is police of another type, or no, this is just a sketchy van that turns out to not be anything. Because one thing that happens a lot with this climate of fear is that people will spread a lot of messages of like, I see ICE here, I see ICE over there, and they're not actually there, but the impact of the fear is so much that people don't leave their homes, don't go to work, don't drop their kids off at school.
16 minutes after the hour, we're talking about immigration and immigrant issues with Donna Gasapo. She's from ICE out of Seville, and Luis Oyola, he's with Legal Aid Justice Center. You're welcome to call and ask questions. We've opened the phone lines up here at Wake Up Call. Our number is 434-284-9470. That's 434-284-9470 for Luis Oyola and Donna Gasapo. I heard that there's a something happens at the Charlottesville Bus Depot. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. So there are people in this community who have organized ourselves to support folks who have been granted an asylum case out of the detention centers in our along our border with Mexico. So these are people who have presented themselves at the border, have asked for asylum, have then been taken into detention, and then have either proven what's called credible fear or some other status, and also demonstrate that they have a sponsor who they can go to while they're in their asylum process. So these people have been granted asylum and then released from the detention centers. Then they travel by plane or by bus to the place where their sponsor lives to stay with them while they're going through their asylum process. And so some of them who are traveling by bus through Charlottesville, we get reports from people at the border that they are on these buses and how many of them and their needs. And we go to the buses at the designated times to meet them and get their needs met to the best of our ability.
Because to emphasize here, when someone either presents themselves at a port of entry or is detained at the border, usually in the desert, the Border Patrol will take away virtually all of their possessions. Mm-hmm. And then when they get released from the detention center, they don't have anything. So they're on these bus routes with very little to no food and very little clue as to where they are along the route. And where they're supposed to transfer, and for a lot of them, no way to speak to someone in English to ask them for help. So a lot of these volunteer groups have sort of grown organically to meet them at the bus stops along the way and provide them with food, have people who speak their language to make sure that they're getting on the correct bus, and or giving them a chance to like use a cell phone to call a family member, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Again, we are talking about immigration and immigrants with Donna Gasapo and Luis Oyola, 19 minutes after the hour. Has there been any, things happen at the bus stop, especially, and we'll get into this after the first break, about certainly much more of stronger two sides to everything these days. Have there been people down at the bus depot arguing against what's going on there?
Yes. I have experienced this myself when I have gone to the bus station to greet travelers that we know are coming through our town from the detention centers, and then we've had it reported to our group from other volunteers also. I think that there's no reason to believe that, you know, the various people who might ride a Greyhound bus are any different than the various people all around the country mm-hmm. who all have their own points of view about migration and people's rights as migrants through our country. And so we prepare for those kinds of confrontations.
But one thing I want to emphasize quickly is that this is actually a very small minority of the travelers. Mm-hmm. More often than not, strangers will be helping alongside us.
Who, yes.
Or will be, if they happen to be bilingual, will be interpreting alongside us. So this has brought out a lot of unexpected kindness in people.
All right. We'll take a quick break. We will be right back. All right. Back here on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. This is WPVC 94.7, which leads us to the phone call. If you'd like to make a phone call, it ends in 9470. That's 434-284-9470. You can call, make your comment about some of the issues in immigration with our guest, Luis Oyola, from Legal Aid Justice Center, where he's a community organizer, the Immigrant Advocacy Program, or Donna Gasapo. She's an activist and an organizer with ICE out of Seville. Dial us up, 434-284-9470. I realize we haven't opened up the phones in a long, long time. Stretch out those fingers before you dial us up. Activism in Charlottesville doesn't seem to go far without involving the University of Virginia. And whether that's the student population or the stand that the university as a whole has to take, which isn't always the same, I'm curious as to where things stand. So let's start with the student population. What can you tell us?
So with the students themselves, there is a large amount of immigrant students at UVA, and particularly the Latinx students at UVA have organized into many groups, such as Dreamers on Grounds, Central Americans for Empowerment, Plumas at UVA. I cannot recall what Plumas stands for right now, but groups like them have, you know, worked as a coalition to do a lot of workshops at UVA on, for example, how to be an ally to an undocumented student, and a lot of activism, for example, to pressure the university administration to open up its financial aid program for students who are either undocumented or what's called underdocumented, which is where they have quote-unquote status that like DACA, for example, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, because these are students who otherwise can prove all of the residency requirements that any other student has. They just happen to not have immigration status.
But how does the school as a whole stand? I mean, because I am assuming that many of the students would go out and be part of ICE out of Seville, would join the Legal Aid Justice Center and say, don't build a wall. Mm-hmm. And whatever the percentage might be, they wouldn't be shy about making notes against the current presidential administration. I'm curious as to what the school, from the president and the Board of Visitors might say against the standing of how our immigrant issues might be now?
So I think I haven't too closely followed what President Jim Ryan has been saying, but I know that he has expressed desire to have the university be open to students of all backgrounds, you know, which just on that level is an indirect affront to the Trump administration's goals. But I know that the Board of Visitors recently approved financial aid access to students in the DACA program. However, this is we are at 2 years since the Trump administration ended the DACA program, which means that that's 2 whole years of students graduating that could have had financial aid at UVA not being able to get it. So because we are that far away from it since the Board of Visitors changed the policy, we have a much lesser number of students that could benefit from that than we would have had had this been approved 2 years ago.
28 minutes after the hour with our guests today, Donna Gasapo and Luis Oyola, as we talk about immigration and migrant families. Let's talk about some of the growing U.S. anger that seems to be the next day that we read the news. There's some event within the last couple of weeks. We've had the incident in El Paso. And when I say incident, it seems like I'm mellowing it out far too much. The gathering in Seattle. There just seems to be so much anger. And a lot of it is because the number of people who don't want people coming across the border here, and they have no problem showing how they feel about it. How do the two of you and those who you represent and assist make people feel safe and healthy to come out and live their lives? Yeah. And live your lives.
Well, it definitely creates or expands the culture of fear for folks in marginalized communities, including migrant and immigrant communities. It's, you know, something for me as someone who is an immigrant and is not a citizen, you know, gives adds another layer of things that I have to be anxious about on a day-to-day basis. And I know that for my immigrant and migrant siblings and other siblings in marginalized communities, you know, this is something that we talk about. But, you know, part of our way of coping is to continue to build our relationships in our communities so that we have a sense that we're here for each other, that we're going to support each other, that when these things happen, that we're not going to be alone. And one of the things that I think is really important in relation to, well, there's two things that I want to make sure that your listeners hear today from me. One of them is that, you know, we know in the aftermath of these horrific attacks that the people involved are people who hold white supremacist ideologies, that, you know, in their social media and in other investigations into their lives, these are people who interacted with white supremacist groups and were carrying out directives or ideologies from within those groups. As people who come from a city that recently experienced a white supremacist attack, it's important for us to see and understand those connections and know that it's not just migrants who are under attack, but our Black communities, our trans and queer siblings, and to understand that we can strengthen our defense of ourselves against these kinds of attacks by being able to see those connections across identities and across experiences. And the other thing that I want to make sure that people hear from me today is that, you know, we've brought up a couple of times now the Trump administration and the relationship of, you know, the violence that we see happening against migrant and immigrant folks and this particular administration. For me, it's important that people know and understand that violent tendencies and even violent ideologies against migrants was here long before Trump came into office. You know, Trump himself is not the problem. The problem is 500 years of colonization on this land that doesn't belong to most of us. And that folks like myself who have had issues with our status here in the United States, we have felt these fears and we have felt the backlash and we have been fighting for ourselves for long before Trump was elected. And that in our responses to what we see happening now, we have to remember that this has been a long battle and a hard fought battle that has been going on for years and years and years.
Thank you. So at Legal Aid Justice Center, you know, there's been a lot of high profile lawsuits that have happened because of human rights abuses at the border. At Legal Aid Justice Center, we recognize the ways that those policies impact here in Virginia and then in Charlottesville. So we have, you know, taking cases, suing for, we've sued ICE over family separation practices that they have had. And we have also represented immigrants in asserting their right to, whether it's a claim to asylum or minors asserting their right to a claim to special immigrant juvenile status. But also, we've been heavily advocating here locally for a change to the Virginia code that would allow undocumented immigrants to have a driver's license. That's something that might seem very simple to us for those who are able to go to the DMV and are able to easily bring the required documentation for driver's license. But for an immigrant, not having a driver's license means that at any point that they are stopped at any point that they're in a traffic stop for any reason, they can be given a summons and even brought into jail for driving without a license, which means that depending on the level of cooperation that the jail has with ICE, that's a fairly streamlined pipeline from just driving to work or driving to school or anything like that to going straight into ICE and then being deported out of the country.
And you mentioned earlier that our jail system had a a fairly smooth connection with ICE.
They still do. They still notify ICE before the release of an immigrant to give them a heads up to come pick them up when they get released.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is an extrajudicial process. There's no mandate by either state, local, or federal governments to notify ICE in that way.
Yep.
Again, the phone lines are available today. I realize it's something we haven't done in a long time, but you are welcome to use them for the topic and the guests, Luis Oyola, Donna Gasapo, to talk about today's topic, 434-284-9470. Talking about the growing U.S. anger, Donna, you mentioned how this goes back for 500 years and you weren't putting, we had mentioned the current administration multiple times, but you weren't highlighting it here, or at least that's how I took it. But do you think that the what's going on now, we're getting more frequent outlets of shootings, more stories, people being more angry, whether it's shouting, whether it's showing up at the bus depot to release their thoughts against what you're doing, whether it's with a gun or without a gun. Do you think that's because the president has said his thoughts on things?
I definitely don't hold him innocent in any of those things. But for me, the impetus to do those things is already there in people. And some people, yes, feel the need to get permission, right? Which I think is what you're getting at, that they hear somebody who holds a seat of power like the president, and then they then believe that that gives them permission to do, you know, to do as they please. But it was there already, right? Like
they already felt that way.
Right.
Now somebody's just saying, I'm doing it, so you can too.
Yeah, exactly. I think we can recognize that the escalation that has happened since 2017 is extremely serious and needs to be addressed. But it didn't come out of nowhere.
Right. Right.
Okay. Just about 11:40 with our guest today, Donna Gasapo from ICE out of Seville, Luis Oyola from Legal Aid Justice Center, as we talk about immigration and what's going on around the United States here in Charlottesville. Let's take a break, come back for our last 20 minutes. And here we come, cruising along for the last 20 minutes on a topic that's far from cruising. We're talking about immigration and immigrants. I was reminded that maybe I should remind people that we won't ask for your name if you choose not to give it. You're welcome to remain anonymous. We're not going to ask for your name if you want to give us a call. Not always the topic where people want to have their name associated when they give their opinion. So our phone number again, 434-284-9470. If you want to call up and ask a question or give your thoughts on immigration for our listeners for our guests, Donna Gasapo, Luis Oyola. I was looking through doing my homework, and Trump's immigration policies center around six major areas. Deport immigrants who arrived in the United States as children. They are currently protected under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, right? So he wants to deport immigrants who arrived in the United States as children. How successful has he been so far?
So the actual program, DACA, like the actual deferred action for deportation, for people who were able to apply and have the be allowed into the program before 2017, they still are in that program. The DACA, even though Trump signed an executive order ending the program in the early days of his presidency, there is still a court battle over whether or not that executive order was actually legal. And so that case has been moving very slowly. And while that case has been going on, the court has ordered that everybody who has been able to be allowed into DACA gets to stay there until a final decision is made by the Supreme Court.
More of his immigration policies, completion of the border wall with Mexico. Certainly he hasn't finished it, but he's won several court battles, including the last one was that he can take money from the military budget to build the border wall, correct?
Yes, that's correct. He's been able to get a portion of it. I believe the $8 billion that he got, he demanded as part of his declaration of emergency. That recent court decision only granted something like $2 billion of that $8 billion. That's still a larger battle for the rest of the funding.
Do either of you know whether Congress still has any oversight of that? I mean, do they have any oversight over what he can spend it on?
I think that's what the courts are battling, right? Because the Congress is the one that approves budgets for the federal government, but Trump is using executive action to try to pull that money for his administration's stated priorities. So that's, you know, that's kind of a challenge of powers that was written in the Constitution. So I think it's a kind of an unclear answer right now that has some very important questions about how much power we delegate to the executive branch and how much power we delegate to the legislative branch.
A lot of that has changed in this administration so far. Restrict travel and work visas from eight countries. That goes back to within a week of his stepping into the presidency, right? Where he wrote the visa for the eight countries that he wanted to stop from coming into the United States. And that was immediately challenged and he lost. And then with over a year plus, I believe he finally won that.
Yeah. So that's what a lot of people called rightfully the Muslim ban. It was originally nine countries, and then the court battle was won by making a concession over one country. I believe it was Yemen. And I think one important thing to point out about that, you know, even though these decisions are happening in DC, and we're talking about countries mostly in the Middle East, but also Muslim majority countries like Bangladesh. This has impact locally because you mentioned IRC that works with refugees. There has been a severe drop in refugees that have been allowed into the country after the Muslim ban, because if you pay attention to national and international news, a lot of conflict and war is happening in Muslim majority countries like Syria, for example. that that people trying to flee, they're trying to survive, but they just happen to be Muslim, and they're from these countries in the Muslim ban, and they're not being allowed into the U.S.
He wants to restrict screening of refugees while cutting the staff needed to do so.
Yes. So this has been part of a broader effort to dismantle the rights of asylum seekers. So, for example, the screening, this is what Donna referred to as the credible fear screening, where an officer who is trained to look for certain signs of fear to return to one's home country is able to determine, okay, this person has credible fear to go back to their home country, we will open up an asylum case. A couple of things to point out with that. An asylum seeker, as far as the law is concerned, they are the same as a refugee. Mm-hmm. And as the difference is, a refugee applies for entry into the country from a foreign country, and an asylum seeker applies for applies at the port of entry, and then they have the case while they are inside the country. Trump has recently referred to these different pieces of the asylum seeking process as loopholes. He claims that he wants to close the loopholes. And what is actually happening is that these are bits that ensure that the rights of asylum seekers are respected, because there are international agreements that countries, including the U.S., have signed on to allow people with credible fear seeking asylum to enter the country, out of a recognition that once you close your border to people fleeing war and violence, that's when you start seeing genocide and mass murder. And that's why there's all these rights in place and process steps in place to ensure the rights of asylum seekers, including being able to do a credible fear interview, and also being able to enter the country you're seeking asylum in.
I have review the H-1B visa program.
I honestly can't speak to that.
Okay. And neither can I. So.
All right.
Okay. And then curb legal immigration, which is much of what we've been talking about for the hour. But I just thought all these things that are happening, which takes me to some of the current changes that have been going on. I found these statistics, and I wanted to talk about whether they're, and we always talk about, you know, can you tell me whether what these statistics mean? Are they just numbers, or what are they truly telling? There's been a noticeable drop in border arrests from May to June and June to July. May to June, border arrests dropped 28%. I think it went from, and I didn't write the numbers down, but I think it went from 98,000 to 70-some thousand. And then from June to July, it dropped another 24%. Is this because fewer people are trying to get into the United States? Is it because fewer people are working? Fewer border agents are working? What is the meaning behind the fact that these are some of the current changes that are going on?
Well, so there are a couple of things there. There are some policies that have recently been put into place, and also some practices on the part of the U.S. government and its and being able to get cooperation with other governments, like, for instance, the government of Mexico. Part of the thing that the U.S. government has been doing for a long time, and again, like, well beyond the Trump administration, is to extend the powers of our border patrol. So, for instance, you know, we have border patrol agents in Guatemala, you know, who are working for the U.S. government but are helping the Guatemalan government to curb the exodus of people from Guatemala through Central America and Mexico and then to our borders. So that's one thing that's
curbing. Is that third-party asylum?
It's the safe third country agreement.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the other thing are is policies like one that was recently put into place called Remain in Mexico. And I think maybe Luis can talk more about that because yeah. I'm...
So this goes hand-in-hand with the safe third country agreement. So... what is happening here is that Trump likes they've mentioned a lot of loopholes. This is one sort of loophole in the asylum process, where if you enter with a country into what's called a safe third country agreement, that country is determined to be a quote unquote safe place for the person to be in while they wait for their asylum process to finish. And so what this has been used by the federal government to implement a Remain in Mexico policy along different ports of entry, an increasing number of ports of entry across the border. So when asylum seekers present themselves, they will have the credible fear interview. And then instead of being put into detention and then released to their sponsors, they're sent back across the border to Mexico, and they are expected to wait there. You know, if you've ever been to the border and can see how busy it is there and how much happens and how hard it is to simply just go back and forth, this is a way to effectively kill that person's claim to asylum, because in Mexico, they will not have access to U.S. lawyers. In Mexico, they will not have access to U.S. resources that allow them to seek the education to go forward in their asylum process. And also in Mexico, you know, if we're talking about Central American asylum seekers in particular, in Mexico, the same cartels that are in the villages of Guatemalan, Honduran, or Salvadorian.
The reason they're leaving. Yeah, the reason these people are leaving.
They're just as active in Mexico. And so they're putting these people in harm's way with policies like these. So... it's not necessarily that the problem has curbed. It's that the federal government has enacted these policies to sort of put the problem elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. All right, running out of time here with our guest Donna Gasapo from ICE out of Seville, where she's an activist and an organizer, and Luis Oyola, where he's a community organizer for Legal Aid Justice Center. A couple things to try and do somewhat quickly. People are aware of the ICE arrests in Mississippi, where I believe they were at food plants.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any need for people to worry about very similar food plants in Harrisonburg?
I think so. And I think one of the pieces to that particular situation in Mississippi that people need to be aware about and aren't necessarily talking about is the fact that these were workers who had just recently, prior to that ICE raid, won a settlement against their employer for both sexual harassment and other workplace harassment. It was a multi-million dollar lawsuit. And shortly after that settlement, ICE came. So the employers, as a way to retaliate against these workers who had organized themselves to stop these workplace harassments, they were using ICE as a way to get those workers out of the workplace and to make it nearly impossible for them to receive the settlement money.
Yeah, so that's it definitely. I mean, these massive raids are meant to put fear in the immigrant community nationwide, And they have. And I think you're spot on in saying, in pointing out that Harrisonburg has a lot of plants similar to this. And I just want to give a shout out to a new organization called the Fuego Coalition in Harrisonburg. They've been working to, they started a campaign to pressure the Rockingham County Sheriff to stop collaborating with ICE on one hand, and also to do outreach in the immigrant community to educate them about their rights, as a lot of the immigrant community there works in these chicken plants.
Okay, 2 minutes. So I want to give each of you 1 minute to tell me what is next for Seville ICE out of Seville, and how can people sign up and join?
So we are continuing our organizing around the jail board's cooperation with ICE. I think, you know, people, we use social media to get people to come to those meetings and to educate them about what that relationship is. And so they can keep an eye out on Twitter and Facebook for our next calls to action to people to come and join us.
And Luis, and Legal Aid Justice Center?
So at Legal Aid Justice Center, we are always happy to enter into pro bono partnerships with attorneys in the region that are that want to fight for justice, whether it doesn't have to be just in immigration, but also in defending workers' rights, students' rights, etc. But also for people who are interested in organizing in the area, I'm happy to be a point of contact. And my email is luis@justiceforall.org. That's luis@justice4all.org.
And we'll be glad to get that to anybody who needs to. And don't forget that ICE hotline, 855-298-3271. Thanks to both of you, Donna Casapo, ICE out of Seville, and Luis Oyola with Legal Aid Justice Center. Thanks to you both for coming on today.
Thanks so much, Rick.
Thank you for having us.
Next week, Barbara Norton will be here telling some true crime stories of Central Virginia. Listen in.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SevillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.